This is the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And today's episode of the Dead TV Podcast is the third to last episode of the television series Constantine, A Whole World Out There, and Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us.
A Whole World Out There. John is sent to help an old friend at Ivy University, where students have figured out how to get to an alternate dimension, only to be met by a killer. Originally aired on January 30th, 2015.
Rather unique and different kind of episode for the whole series. Right off the bat, I am going to unfortunately say this episode really bored me.
Really?
Yeah. It took me a couple times to get through it, because I was just insanely, and I was doing nothing else like I normally do. Like, I usually do it at a time. I'm like, oh, okay, I got some time to, I got an hour or two to kill. I will get an episode, the podcast episode done for the week. And I was not into it.
Ah, you know, I really like this episode, mainly because, of course, I like, you know, Richie Simpson as a character, and I also love the actor himself. Because Richie Simpson in the comic books has this same type of storyline where he goes to this alternate dimension, but for him it's inside computers. And the way that they're doing it in the show is that they're going to this kind of spiritual dimension that is unlocked by Egyptian ritual. And so seeing the similarities and differences between the television and comics, I think that's what kept me entertained. The actors that played the students were okay, you know. It was basically a one-trick operation. You know, it was only John, not Zed or Chad. So it was just him and Reggie Simpson for most of the episode. I kind of like their duality in this. I could admit, you know, in some parts it's a little slow. It seems a little bit slasher film in some of it. You know, it could be very predictable in that way. But I don't know. I really enjoyed it.
You know, what's funny is that I thought I would really like it, mainly also because the director has been in so many things of this episode. The director, Thomas J. White, got started working on the 1980s revival of The Twilight Zone, worked on Max Headroom, Beauty and the Ooh. Beast, which starred Ron Perlman and Linda Hamilton.
Excellent.
Highlander, the series, A Space Above and Beyond, Millennium and the X-Files, various CSI shows, Dinotopia, which was a short-lived dinosaur show on ABC starring Wentworth Miller from the Prison Break series, as well as Captain Cold in our DC television continuity universe, Smallville, mm-hmm. One Tree Hill, Castle, and is currently working in episodes of Supernatural and NCIS.
Wow, that's a heck of a resume.
Yeah, this is the only episode of Constantine he did, but his freaking directing career in television is long. So, and like I said, he has an episode of Supernatural coming out for the upcoming 13th season of that show.
I can't believe it's been on for 13 seasons.
I just,
you know, if they ever get canceled, you know, we have reason to get into that show, but oh my God, 13 seasons.
Yeah, we're not going to cover that show. That show has enough.
Yeah, no.
That show won't be canceled. It will officially end because it actually, as they said, the 14th season will be the final season.
Okay.
And I also do another podcast about that show anyway, so
okay.
I'm not double dipping. No double dipping for me. But, you know, what's funny is that Constantine and Supernatural are so alike in so many ways. You kind of wonder why that audience didn't find Constantine.
I don't know. I really like Constantine's flavor better than Supernatural's. The I don't know, anti-hero-ness of Constantine strikes a better chord with me than the dueling brothers of the Winchester family.
True. What, by the way, what comic book did this episode originate from? Because you said it happened in the comic books.
Yes. Well, in the original Sin storyline, we leave Richie Simpson basically trapped inside his machine. He has achieved singularity, which is mentioned in this episode. He talks about the singularity, but in the comic, he actually achieves it. He goes back, well, we as an audience go back to meet up with Richie a little bit later in the The Devil You Know trade paperback, which I believe is like issues 10 through 15, something like that.
Okay.
But we actually finally meet up with Richie, and he's still kind of trapped in the machine. And, you know, there's an interplay with Nurgle. Basically what happens in the comic books is that in the original Sins, he's basically like a quantum magician. Richie's a quantum magician, so he is definitely deep into computers, deep into what he calls the fifth dimension. And he touches heaven inside the machine. And in doing so, his body kind of burns up from the inside out. And so his whole body burns to a crisp, and Constantine just kind of unplugs the machine and leaves him there because, you know, what the hell are you going to do? You don't have a body to come back to.
True.
Over time, Richie gets better and better at manipulating this mechanical world, and the illustrations for it are fantastic. You know, it's got, you know, Tron-ish type of imagery plus, like, pixelization and the sketches of it, of the body just kind of being ethereal looking. And then in The Devil You Know, Nurgle, you know, as you remember, is the one that his blood is in John's veins, Nurgle the demon, is trying to flush out John because John has basically cast all of his protection and silence spell. So Nurgle can't find nobody. Nurgle is trying to flesh him out by giving John these immense boils on his face and body. So he looks horrible. Like, he looks like death ravaged him. And so Richie is sending John messages through his utility bills and through his banking statements and telling him to come to call this number, and they talk over telephone lines. And Richie gives him instructions on where to go for this computer setup. He's arranged everything basically from the mechanical world. You know, he's kind of like Lawnmower Man in that time of his life.
Well, yeah, like the movie with Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, yeah, and so he is now in control of these computers, and he can travel anywhere. And the whole reason he got into there in the first place is they were trying to track down the Resurrection Crusade. Which, you know, ties into Zed's storyline in the television show. But anyway, so John hooks himself up to the machine, goes into the machine to talk to Richie face-to-face, or electronic face-to-face, electronic face, and then Richie takes over John's body. He says, like, oh, okay, well, you know, tough shit, man. You know, it's my body now. Kind of doing a body snatchers thing. And John then convinces... Nurgle enters the room because he can find John now that John has transitioned to the machine. He sees John's body and doesn't believe it's him because John is now in the machine. Somehow,
would you say that John is a ghost in the machine?
You could say that. Well, Richie is more like the ghost in the machine, but
yeah,
Richie's taking over John's body.
Yeah.
John convinces Nurgle that in order to fight him, he has to fight him where he is. So Richie hooks up Nurgle to the machine. Nurgle goes in. Now, being a demon crossing over into this, like, fifth dimension, he makes the parallel that it's almost like the astral plane, except more mathematical.
Okay.
And then John takes him to basically where Richie found heaven, you know, like the edges of heaven. And because it is a heaven, Nurgle burns up. Like, he just completely disintegrates in the electronic realm, leaving his body there. So when Richie is basically about to, like, shut off the computers and go, like, see ya, John, I've got my body, John says, you know, what do you think I met you for? You know, look in a mirror, man. I'm like 3 days from death. And so John convinces Richie to transfer himself into Nurgle's body for the intense power. And he does, which gives John the ability to transfer back into his own body. And then the demon's agony and ecstasy show up because Nurgle is now dead. Agony and ecstasy, which are basically the slave twins of the Inquisition, they're the ones who decide who has won in battle between demons and humans. or as far as I can tell. And they declare that Constantine is the victor of Nurgle because he's beat him three times now. And so he is the complete victor, and he is free to go. But they end up taking Richie in Nurgle's body, or at least, you know, a semblance of the body, because some of it kind of burned away. And they take him down to hell because he doesn't deserve to be in a devil's body, and they call him an imposter. So now Richie is trapped in hell for 10,000 years, trying to learn everything about agony and ecstasy in kind of like this Hellraiser-ish type of way.
Hmm.
And then that's basically the plight of Richie. So in the show, having him turn away from this paradise, you know, this world, and come back to the real world, totally not what happened in the comics. Totally not what happened. I suspect that they did that simply so that they could have the actor back on to the show in some sort of future episode.
Yes. When you're talking about Heaven, Heaven played a really important role in this episode because Manny was his typical self, but when John needed somebody to stay behind to watch over things, Manny then appeared. Of course, Richie couldn't see him, but Manny was there in order to watch over what they were about to do in order to rescue the remaining kids who had been mucking around in the tomb in the beginning of the episode with dark forces that they didn't understand, which of course triggered the serial killer to come after them.
Mm-hmm.
The serial killer played by William Matathor, which, as I mentioned, Harold Perrineau as Manny, and then of course Richie played by Jeremy Davis, are all three actors who have appeared on Lost. Now, these three actors, by the way, never interacted with one of... No, that's not entirely true. Yeah.
But they were all on Lost together.
For the most part, these three actors almost barely ever interacted with each other. In fact, William's character, Ethan, is killed off in season one, and that's how we learned about there are other people on this island that were not on the plane crash. Harold was one of the original plane crash survivors, and then Richie was one of the team members sent to the island to investigate what the hell is going on, because the island is part of a giant experiment with space, time, and things like that. And he becomes a permanent character of the show. In fact, he has the ability to jump in and off the island. He has like a special power or something. But Richie and William never interact. William never interacts with Harold's character, and Harold and Richie almost have, I think, are in the same scenes together, but they barely have any interaction with each other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah. All three actors are on Lost, but again, not like, you know, in consecutive episodes.
Huh. That's really interesting.
I love how spooky dumb kids doing dumb stuff in tombs is how we open up with the episode.
Yeah, it's like the like any sort of entry to a horror movie. Kids do something really dumb, and they're playing with forces that they don't really understand. Then they get themselves into trouble. Slasher, you know.
Yes. Yeah, very typical slasher stuff. If you're not familiar with the slasher film genre, mainly because it's been kind of dead for a while, go buy the Friday the 13th video game, and you can experience a slasher film all over again. Because there's no slasher movies out right now, and they're not making any slasher movies. The only thing they're making are movies that are kind of like Constantine. They're supernatural, demonic possession movies. We got Annabelle coming out. We have the Nun spinoff from The Conjuring coming out. We have Wish Upon coming out. All these horror movies that are coming out and dealing with supernatural elements, I always think to myself, what would John Constantine do in a situation like this? Or what would Sam and Dean Winchester do in a situation like this?
Yeah. You know, horror movies kind of cycle through, you know, what's popular, what's not popular. Like, movies like The Grudge were popular for a little bit of time with the, you know, long hair, the creepy, you know, ceiling crawling and stuff like that. And then there's slasher films that are really popular for a time. You know, just like any sort of catastrophic film, you know, the weather pattern movies have this cycle that they go through. Like, tornadoes this year, it's big and hot and popular. And volcanoes this year, it's big and hot and popular. Right now, it's like supernatural, occultish type of genre.
Correct. And we got the Exorcist Season 2 coming out late September on Fox once again, which is great, which means we won't have to cover it on this show anytime soon. And that, you know, again, the straight-up demonic possession story is what The Exorcist is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when John goes to Richie's classroom and the really pretty blonde turns around and looks at him and gives him the eye, and John just can't help attracting the, you know, hot women.
Of course, you know, it's this older guy who's got his feet up on the chair and giving the teacher a little bit of hell, you know? It's to a college girl, that's kind of sexy. Yeah, kind of sexy. But Richie's character is so, like, anxiety-ridden that he actually just uses a tape recorder to do his lectures in class.
Yes, which changes... excuse me, I'm, like, choking to death. Which completely changes at the end of the episode. Based on his experience, he puts the tape recorder away to speak to his class as a person in a lecture, not relying on a tape recorder.
Yeah, I think that insight that he has gotten into actually being in an alternate dimension and turning away from what could be a paradise for him, the escapism, gives him this whole new perspective. And I really love, you know, jumping to the end, you know, of the episode and the lessons that he gives right in that lecture, is that, one, suffering is unavoidable. Two, suffering is caused by a craving, and that humans seek to find relief in many ways that do not satisfy the soul. So, you know, he went there, and it's just escapism. And that, three, inner peace is possible, but humankind suffering won't end until we learn how to stop our own desire. And that kind of repeats throughout the episode a lot of times, because we see not only the escapism of the alternate dimension, but in the vault, you know, of Jasper Winter's place of occult, we see in the mirror that shows past events, we see a reflection of Gary Lester kind of craving his heroin fix. So it's a little bit of that, like, the ghosts of Constantine's past coming to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that very beginning scene, when Manny first comes to him, saying that, hey, get off your ass and do something, you know, he's just boozing himself up in his underwear. Yeah, it's kind of Constantine's own bit of escapism. Like, I'm going to ignore the map, just drink, because Zed and Chaz are gone, and, you know, I'm taking a break. And Manny urges him, like, not to, because Richie needs his help.
He definitely...
And he doesn't even know it yet.
Yeah, true. He definitely seems a bit disgusted with John, because he knows he's better than this to be able to pick himself up again.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no rest for the wicked never sleep. Do you want me to get into the Egyptian mythology?
Yes. The next piece of my notes was lots of spooky symbols before we actually are introduced to Jacob Shaw, played by the actor who played Ethan from Lost. Yeah, but there's a lot of spooky symbols before we meet him.
Okay. Well, I took a look at some of Jacob Shaw's writings in the book. You know, there's some pictures online I found of different pages from the book that are shown on screen, like for a flash, you know. And there's a drawing of the configuration of symbols that are on the ground during the seance. You know, basically it's a rectangle, which they use in the crypt or mausoleum area. And around each side, you know, there's a total of six symbols. There is the Eye of Horus, which is a talisman for the living and the dead.
Yep.
There is a symbol of Isis, and she is kind of known for being the great goddess of nature and renewal and things like that.
Hold on one quick second. I actually had something to play, and my computer keeps, like, freezing on me every time I try to bring something up. So I actually got a bit to play.
Sure.
Okay, so for anyone listening, including Mr. Zeneca, we all know what ISIS now unfortunately represents. So we have ISIS, the evil terrorist organization determined to rule the world. We have ISIS, the fictitious spy organization from the TV series Archer. And then we also have this, which is, of course, connected to the DC Comics pantheon.
Oh, my queen, said the royal sorcerer to Hatshepsut, with this amulet, you and your descendants are endowed by the goddess Isis with the powers of the animals and the elements. You will soar as the falcon soars, run with the speed of gazelles, and command the elements of sky and earth. 3,000 years later, a young science teacher dug up this lost treasure and found she was heir to the secrets of Isis. And so, unknown to even her closest friends, Rick Mason and Rennie Carroll, she became a dual person. Andrea Thomas, teacher.
Oh, mighty Isis.
And Isis, dedicated foe of evil.
The Secrets of Isis, the DC comic show for the 1970s, which was run alongside Shazam. A woman finds a mystical Egyptian amulet, and she says, by the power of Isis, and then she transforms into Isis in a, like...
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then, of course, she would eventually show up in the actual DC comic books and run around with, actually, Mary Black Adam, Captain Marvel's sworn archenemy.
I mean, Isis is such a powerful goddess in Egyptian mythology. I'm not surprised that it's been used for a whole heck of a lot of things.
Yeah, I just don't understand how we go from, like, Egyptian god of a lot of good stuff, because she's apparently a good god, to evil terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
Well, how did the swastika get matched up with Nazis? You know, it's a Hindu symbol of yeah. You know, a lot of good stuff.
I thought it was Egyptian.
Huh?
I thought the swastika was Egyptian.
No, it's Hindu.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was Egyptian. Okay, no. Moving on with the other symbols.
Okay.
Now that we've been on the tangent.
The other Egyptian symbols here. Next, we have the crook and flail, which, if you've ever seen a sarcophagus, it's usually the things that the pharaohs hold in their hands.
Yes.
The crook is basically like the shepherd's hook.
Mainly made famous on, like, the Tomb of King Tut.
Yes, yes. But really, any pharaoh is usually pictured with them. So the crook is a symbol that they are the shepherd of people. And then the flail is the symbol that they are the provider of food for the people. So then at the bottom, you know, which is across the way from the Eye of Horus, is the symbol for the Was scepter, which is a long staff with an animal head at the top, and that embodies magical powers and power and authority. And that's next to a symbol for loaf, or the letter T, and a symbol for stone. So that would mean, basically, I think, offerings. You know, you would place an offering in this quadrant of the rectangle. Keep going around the circle here, clockwise. Then we have the symbol for Ra. And that's actually not the full symbol for Ra, it's just the beginning characters, which is kind of an oval, which is mouth, or the letter R, and a line with a, basically an underline with a little tip at on the right-hand side, and that is arm, or the letter A. In the Egyptian hieroglyphics, there's two ways to actually say A. There is a picture of an eagle, and that is A as in water, or a picture of an arm, and that's A as in hat. So that little symbol is basically Ra spelled out. Next you have, and the last one on the list, is the symbol of Anubis. Each of these is basically a god, and then at the very top, above the Eye of Ra, is pictured in the journal, wings outspread the goddess Maat, and then at the bottom, kneeling down before them is the souls of Pe and Nakhen. And Pe is actually the capital of Lower Egypt at the time, and Nakhen is the capital of Upper Egypt. So they were to represent the two pharaohs that controlled the area. So it's basically like by God and by by spiritual and by physical, we manifest this with the helps of the gods. And so that is all of these gods, their powers, and their symbology, plus the offering is supposed to get them into this next plane. Now, when you take a look at the entirety of his journal and the images that I was able to get online, he writes some really crazy, contradictory things. Jacob Shaw's journal, which is basically the cursed object in this whole episode, if you will, he writes, "It is good to be a cynic, though it's better to be a contented cat. I am an outsider. Religion is still useful among the herd." You know, very much like almost a megalomaniac in the way he writes. The ancient Egyptians and a deed conviction of an underlying holiness and unity within the universe. Like, a lot of it just doesn't really make sense. But it's just packed with Egyptian drawings and charts and geography maps. It's a really interesting book, so I'm not surprised that the teacher's assistant, Adam, actually stole it from the desk, because it's beautiful to look at in the insanity of its writings. I'll kind of go into some more a little bit later, but...
These kids don't exactly die in very flattering ways. They're all very reminiscent of the way you would die in a silent film. Slasher film. But where they kind of go reminds me a lot of the movie The Conjuring. I didn't mean The Conjuring. Insidious, where the father goes to find his son.
You know, I never saw that one.
Oh my god, seriously? They're not terrible horror movies. Like, the first one is, I think, the best one. The second one continues the story of the first one, so you can't complain about it too much. The third one's a prequel. And we're going to get the fourth one next year.
Is that the one where they actually watch a video on a Super 8 reel? And
no, that's Sinister. Same company, though. Same company. That's Sinister. That's with Ethan Hawke. And from the director of Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Very good movie is too, by the way. Since you have kids, totally watch it. Because then you will lock your kids in their room forever. When can I come out, Mommy? Not until you're 18. I know you won't kill me.
Yeah. I actually thought the house reminded me a lot of The House of Mystery.
Well, yeah, but what I mean is, like, there's a... He has to go into... The dad, Patrick Wilson, I think it is, has to go into, like, another realm, like a ghost world, to find his son's soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like what this is, because they're in like another realm. Even though they're dead, they are in like another realm. They're not quite in heaven or hell yet.
Yeah, it's like a purgatory almost.
Exactly. And I guess they're in purgatory because they're promiscuous teenagers.
I think it's more like they're in purgatory because they're curious teenagers.
They're dead and in purgatory. I just thought maybe they're because dead. They were, you know, smoking the weed and drinking the beer and having the sex that they didn't go to heaven or hell.
I think the episode would have been a little bit improved if there had been some sex in it.
You know, I say the same thing about the Friday the 13th video game. For a Friday the 13th video game, there is no sex or drugs in the game. And I'm like, what the hell, guys? This should be like The Sims. We should be trying to get it on with each other.
You know, teenagers, you know, can't have fun. They can't do drugs. They can't have sex because that is automatically their ticket to death.
Correct.
Yeah, I actually thought it was more like the House of Mystery, you know, since that actually does exist in the realm of dreaming and on Earth. It has kind of loose connections to Constantine as well.
Absolutely, correct.
So the interaction between the students after they get out of this Jacob Shaw realm, and they continually, like, see him in reflected surfaces, and then one by one just kind of get sucked into the other dimension, and then their wounds from that dimension end up being what they die by in the earthly dimension. So suffocation, impalement, slashing on his throat and arms, and then one woman gets sucked into by looking at her cell phone, of all things. Lily.
Yeah.
The last girl.
That kind of... God, I'm trying to remember what horror movie I saw where somebody used the reflection in the cell phone. Oh, it was on Supernatural. It was the reflection in like a compact mirror or something like that. They were trying to stop Bloody Mary from killing the final girl.
Oh man, I thought that was like lame, you know.
They eliminated all the possibilities, but they left one open for us. Somewhat ingenious, somewhat lame. I think that's one of the reasons, again, it amounted to why I didn't like this episode.
To get back into the Egyptian thing, because they do it again at the end of the episode for John and Richie to go into the alternative realm to retrieve Lily, because she gets sucked into it by looking at her goddamn cell phone. The incantation that they say is Duat Akin Ka Ren Ba Ib Suet Duat Akin Marat. So, to dissect all that...
You're a better person than me being able to actually repeat that out loud, because I heard it in the episode, and I was just like, no.
Yeah. you need to wave your hand over the candle. You know, if you don't wave your hand over the candle, it doesn't make it legit, man.
Yeah, okay. Or that, or you're just a little bit more worldly than me.
So, Duat is actually the metaphysical spirit world of the Egyptian mythology. So, it's connected to Egyptian magic and afterlife. And so it actually contains the paradise of Aru. Duat is basically like calling the spirit world.
Okay, every time you say Duat, I keep thinking of Duat, Duat.
That's Duwop.
Oh, Duwop. That's Duwop, sorry.
Duwop.
Moving on.
So Akhen is the ferryman of the dead. So much like in the Greek pantheon, they do have a ferryman. So
You give the coins too, right?
What?
Isn't that what they lay? In some cultures, they'll lay two coins on the eyes of the dead when they bury them, so that way they'll have the two pieces of silver to give to the ferryman when he comes across the River Styx.
Yep.
I know stuff.
So do what I can. So they're, you know, calling the spirit world and asking the ferryman to take them. And then Ka, Ren, Ba, Eb, and Suet, those are actually the five parts of the human soul. So Ka is the spark of life, and it's the only thing that basically is the difference between living and dead. Ren is the essence of your living being. Ba is your personality, and so that's what makes you you. Ib is your heart, and basically the all of your good deeds and bad deeds. And so then your Ib is actually what, you know, if you were to cross over into Christian mythos, that's what Peter at the gate would be looking at in order to determine whether you're going to hell or going to heaven. So your Ib is basically like the sum of everything.
Who's the guy? Did you watch American Gods?
Not yet, man. Okay. I'm so behind.
Oh my god, you got your kid during the summer. That's what's keeping you down, man.
I don't have cable, so I have to.
Yeah. I don't think American. How old is your son?
Nine.
Not appropriate enough for American Gods.
No,
trust me.
Totally
not even not. Not even close. Gods, the wife, God, it's killing me who does this. She has her heart ripped out of her chest while she's dead, so it doesn't really hurt her. She's just like, what are you doing? Oh my God, I can still feel that. And put on the scale. Who does that to weigh their heart against their sins?
Osiris does that.
Oh, it's Osiris.
As well.
Okay.
Osiris, yeah.
I thought it was Anubis that does that.
No, it's Osiris.
Okay. So
he's the judge.
Yeah. Okay. So that.
And it's also the reason why the hearts are kept within the mummy instead of taken and put into a jar.
Yes, correct. Okay, so that kind of also popped in my head when I was watching this too. Mainly because I just finished binge watching American Gods. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with this story. This is, like, one of the things they teach you in the elementary school.
But finally, the last word is suet, and that's the shadow. And that's basically the shadow of yourself in the physical world and in the spiritual world, the duat world. So it's kind of, one writer says it's kind of like the failsafe. It's the small piece of your soul that exists in both places so you can come back to it.
Yep.
And then Maat is the Egyptian goddess of order and balance and harmony. So in the diagram of the ritual space, Maz is the one with her wings extended. And so you're calling the spirit world, the ferryman, the five sources of what makes you you, and then calling the goddess for judge. So that's basically a prayer to the ferryman to kind of cross over and do it with safety, with Maz. So I thought that was actually pretty interesting. A little note here, when John, says a little bit of a magical spell in order to reveal those symbols in the cemetery block.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Fodi Sala Lavego Haji Igaz Legyan Reveal E Te Titlok. It's basically, I couldn't do an exact translation. I think it's Hungarian, but it's roughly translates to earth and air to be true through the secret. So it's like to reveal the secret through earth and air.
One of the kids that are taken away, the guy in the hoodie, I swear to God, I thought that was the internet troll villain from the remake of Ghostbusters.
Oh, he does look pretty similar, but no.
It's not him. His name is William Campbell, and the only thing he has on his IMDb is Constantine, and then a TV series called Hellblazer Biz? I don't know if this is supposed to be a... I don't know what this is.
I haven't heard of that one.
No, it's a... The IMDb for it is very not completed, and I think it's just a... you know how they do, like, after The Walking Dead and after Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I am.
I think this was one of those in Britain only for Constantine. Since the name Hellblazer is in it, and Hellblazer is the name of the comic book.
Yeah.
So, I think that's what it was.
Hopefully he gets more work if he's going to, stay in the acting gigs.
It's the only thing he did since that one episode, so I don't think he's staying as an actor. But I had written in my notes that he's from the from Ghostbusters. the weird house they go to, that house, I think you said, reminds you of the House of Mystery? Because that's where we finally get to it in this episode. Yeah, that's, I have that in my notes, too, that I thought this was the House of Mystery. And also, where the kids are while they're walking around Limbo and dealing with their death reminds me of the in-between in Insidious. And then this is where Manny finally shows up to be helpful.
Yeah, he shows up a couple of times to try to convince John that, you know, Richie should be on their side, or that Richie needs John, and then he watches over them, you know, when they're casting their own little ritual at the end. So he's at least a little bit helpful in this episode. Previous episodes, you know, most of the time he's just talks and doesn't really do anything and doesn't really help him in any sort of way, so... It was a nice little break from Manny being just a flying
piece of exposition.
Pain in the ass.
Yeah. nothing too important with Manny lately. But the last two episodes, I think we're going to get a lot of them. So.
Richie has the power to shape the world.
Yeah. Which he doesn't use selfishly.
No, he uses it to create a doorway to get to where they want to go, because this house is always changing, you know, which is kind of the way that Jacob Shaw confuses his victims. It's his world, he says. So,
by the way, okay, so now I understand why my notes were written this way they were. So, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. There's a House of Secrets and a House of Mystery.
Yes, there is.
Yes. And the only time that I can remember in recent history that they're both in the same place is the Injustice comic book series, where Trigon is fighting Mitzelpidelic, the Spectre. Trigon is fighting the Spectre. And if you don't know who Trigon is the father of Raven from the Teen Titans. She's got a very Rosemary's Baby kind of origin story. And this happens in the middle of Batman and Superman's war versus each other in the Injustice storyline, where Batman calls upon John Constantine and the other magic users like Zatanna, Etrigan the Demon, to help stop Superman's army. And John traps both teams in both the House of Mystery and the House of Secrets while Trigon fights the Spectre, because it is a battle of God, basically. Because Trigon is basically like a devil, and Spectre is the vengeful hand of God.
Yeah, and don't both houses kind of live outside, you know, in their own little pocket dimension, so to say?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I way back when, you know, when it was first run, I did used to read House of Secrets.
Yeah, they were basically a compilation of stories. They were kind of like Tales from the Crypt, with a little bit more of a
darker age, I think.
Yeah, darker age, but they also had a little bit more of a continuity in them. One of the characters that appeared in it was the Eye Vampire, Andrew Bennett, who has teamed up with John Constantine before. And his wife, Mary Queen of Blood, has come from this. She's like the queen of all vampires. This has become kind of a like Easter egg in the current building storyline to The Metal, where a cult hanging out with each other. Not like a bad cult, there just happens to be bad people in it, but they're kind of looking like a cult. One of the members is Mary Queen of Blood before she's a vampire, Ra's al Ghul, the wizard Shazam, Zatara, Zatanna's father, Jason Blood, and a couple other people I can't remember off the top of my head. The guy who owns the house that John lives in during the series?
Yeah.
That guy that we mentioned?
Jasper Widgers.
Thank you, yes. Jasper Widgers is also part of this group. And they all want a piece of this metal, which we don't know what it is. It's apparently 10th metal, which is above 9th metal, which is what the Thanagarian weapons, harnesses, maces are all made of.
Because it's totally metal, man.
Yeah, basically, man. All the covers to all the comic books are all, like, kind of metal-ish and rock on. And we find out that the enemy, the true enemy of the Hawk people are a clan of demonic bats. And this is supposedly like where the bat images come from in DC Comics is what they're going to be explaining. And it's getting a little weird. Like the Joker finds like all these like bat images and stuff when he died and he was resurrected. And it's a big like building storyline to some serious shit in DC Comics coming up. Batman's at the center of it unintentionally.
Sounds like it's going to go off the rails.
It's going to go way off the rails. John Constantine hasn't even been mentioned yet, but I'm wondering when he's going to play into this, because they've got a lot of mixture of like alien science and supernatural crashing into each other. Like the bat people are definitely not from this world, but I don't think they're aliens, but their enemies are aliens. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm like, so when does John Constantine come into this?
Yeah.
And the other magic
when
user.
When is he going to swoop in to, you know, pull some cons?
Exactly, because you have Mary Queen of Blood, Ra's al Ghul, and Zatara in these flashbacks, so they're pretty much magic-based, being all supernaturalists. So we'll
Zatara,
see.
You know, she and John, you know, had a thing.
Zatanna, yes. Zatanna and John. Zatanna has a great little one-shot where John is turned into a cat. Because he... he was turned into a cat because of sleeping with the wrong type of woman.
Oh, John.
When Richie wakes up from it, and because he wants to come back, you know, John's like, come on, Richie, I know, you don't want to be there, come back or whatever. And he goes back to his class, and he's got the tape recorder. My biggest question on my mind was, in 2015, who the hell is using a tape recorder?
My assumption was that he recorded these lessons so long ago that he's still on, you know, pre-MP3 technology.
Oh, okay. So he probably recorded these before all the crap went down with John.
Or at least, you know, it would have been after Newcastle, of course, because then he got signed up with Ivy University. And Ivy University, you know, little tip for all you comic fans, is actually in the DC world. So Ivy University is also the employer of the Atom. Have it in my notes here.
Oh, yeah. The Atom, who is currently on DC's Legends of Tomorrow, played by former Superman Returns actor Brandon Routh.
Yeah, Ray Palmer, the Atom, is employed by Ivy University.
Oh.
And it's now a recurring character on Arrow.
Yeah, or DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
I wonder. Oh, I'll have to look into see if that's ever actually mentioned, to see if that's tied in together like that. That's kind of interesting. Obviously, they wrote that in there, knowing that it's a DC university.
DC World,
kind of,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like ESU, Empire State University, doesn't really exist in New York, but does exist in the Marvel Universe, most notably the Spider-Man comic books, because that's where Peter goes to college.
Mm-hmm.
And where Kurt Connors works, aka the Lizard, and other characters, you know, interact with it. So I wonder if they wrote that knowing that, hopefully they didn't just pull that out of their butts and not do their own research. So,
I mean, considering they do a lot of research for the show, as we outline, I would say it's probably on purpose. You know, there's actually a lot of Easter eggs in this particular episode when Richie and John are kind of walking across the campus together, probably like mid-late in the episode. They pass by Bradstreet Hall, a little sign that says Bradstreet Hall, and that's actually in dedication to Tim Bradstreet, which is a cover artist for Hellblazer.
Oh, neat. That's fantastic. There's a great line, by the way, mentioned earlier in the episode. It says, humankind's suffering won't end until we learn to stop.
Yeah, that's basically what he says at the very end. This point of you can't escape your problems, and doing so will not lead you to nirvana.
Correct.
There another Easter egg. I'm not sure if you noticed, but there is a call out to Swamp Thing.
No, what was it?
In Richie's office, which is just filled with all sorts of stuff. Like, you know, it's filled with all sorts of stuff. You know, he's kind of hoarder like in his office keeping. But there's a post-it note that is on screen right nearby John's head when he's sitting down in Richie's office that says, "Send to Alec Holland." That's all
oh.
It says, but Alec Holland is the Swamp Thing.
Yeah, so maybe this would have led into we don't have it this year, but maybe it would have led into a future episode in season 2 of Alec Holland, which would eventually lead into hopefully him becoming a Swamp Thing.
I would have hoped so. You know, watching this show, it makes me sad. Episode by episode, we get into this, that there isn't a season 2 for us to continue.
No, and who knows what they'll be doing with the upcoming anime show starting in sometime next year.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll continue some plot elements. Again, the only person that has been confirmed to be anybody is Ryan voicing his character of John Constantine. So that's all we have right now. There's,
okay.
I don't remember seeing anything about Constantine, the anime show, mentioned at Comic-Con. If
yeah.
it was, let us know. You can let us know on Facebook and say, oh yeah, here's a link to the Constantine reference.
Also in Richie's office were several references to Mucous Membrane, the band that John was in. There's the album cover, which is pictured near Richie's head in one of the scenes. And then there's a poster and paintings in the back of Richie's office on the walls that are kind of nods to the Hellblazer comics as well. Lots of stuff in his office. There's even a book there that I couldn't personally see it because it was too small on my screen, but I heard there's a book called Elephants on Acid.
Elephants on Acid.
Elephants on Acid. It's like, interesting. It's still like alternative mindscapes, if you will.
There is a poster image of Constantine up for the anime show. The thing is that the art looks just like, I don't want to dissuade anybody, it is for the upcoming show. The artwork does look like the Justice League Dark movie, because that's the animation style that they are using through a lot of these DC animations. So it's going to look like it came out of the Justice League Dark, but it is for the upcoming Constantine anime show.
Cool. In this episode, I did not really find a yum moment.
No, and there's not really a big kind of douchebag moment. I mean, the villain's kind of a dick, but I'm never going to give it to the villain.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the most douchebag moment you could say was just basically when Constantine shows up and is kind of, you know, douchey to Richie in his lecture class.
Yeah, or Manny's always a douchebag, but we'd have to give it to him in every single episode.
And that's true, but Manny was actually helpful in this episode, so I can't give it to him in this one.
No.
I think this episode really relates how John has a deep respect for Richie. No matter what, you know, he respects him for what he does, feels bad for him for how far he fell in his personality and his dealings, basically from the events at Newcastle.
Yeah.
Richie is constantly saying how he just wants to be alone. You know, he takes a lot of, you know, sedatives and medications just to be like this. And he still has so much high anxiety. So I think John feels really bad about that. And when Richie finds the paradise that he can make his own, you know, no matter what, and John convinces him to come back, you know, he does say a bit of douchebaggy things, but it's more like that tough love. Like, he loves Richie enough that he doesn't want him to escape into this world and basically just wither away with his body and die.
Not a lot of write-ups for this episode that I could find. Let me correct that real quick. There is one. No big write-ups for this episode. Probably the last two will have some, as they had already announced that the ratings on the show had already been coming through as not being that great. So a lot of people were writing the show off as being canceled, and sure enough, within a couple weeks after the last episode aired, they did announce it was canceled. We go on, and we got two episodes of the TV series left, and then we will do our one special episode dedicated to his appearance on Arrow in the Justice League Dark movie. The actress Skylar Day, who was in this episode, she played the female who was killed off. She has some other Vertigo comic book credits, as she was in iZombie.
Oh, nice.
She was in an episode of iZombie.
Another fun fact that our actor that plays Jacob Shaw, William Mapother, he is actually the first cousin of actor Tom Cruise.
Yes, that's kind of interesting, even though he doesn't look anything like Tom Cruise.
Nothing like him at all.
No, but cousins are normally usually don't look that close and similar compared to, like, brothers and sisters.
True. So, but, you know, Tom Cruise's last name really is Mapother.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so he changed his name for his roles.
So, well, there you go. It was your fun fact.
There is all we have for this episode of Constantine. You can, of course, find us on our Facebook page, The Dead TV Podcast, as well as on Twitter at ChrisDSAV and Mr. Seneca's Twitter.
At Elegantly Kinky.
And thank you once again to Jessa Lantern for providing us our theme song for this episode. And thank you, Mr. Seneca. See you in a couple weeks.
See you then. Good night, everyone.